Welcome in to the Late Night Gamecock Show. I am your host, Matt Anderson, the Late Night Gamecock, and joining me as always is Alex Jones of thebigspur.com. Alex, welcome to February, and I guess welcome to snow in South Carolina.
I know. I hope everybody enjoyed the snow, survived the snow here in Columbia. We seems like we maybe didn't get as much as what was first thought, or maybe some other people got around the state, but still a whole lot of fun and really looking forward to this show tonight.
Yeah, I am too. And we'll it's kind of tease here on the title of the show, but before we get to Trey Kelly, this weather kind of put a damper a little bit on the junior day that was at South Carolina for football. We know that those kids, they had about half dozen to maybe two dozen scheduled to come in. I think only about maybe a half dozen made it in because of the weather. Alex, we'll talk about this on another show. We don't have a whole lot of time for it, but who made it in this week?
You know, one of the biggest targets I probably made in this week, or did make it in this week, was Nate Carson, the four-star offensive lineman from Irmo, guy that South Carolina's been in on for a while, but, you know, it was good for them to get him back over to facility for that day. You know, had some 28 guys, too, that were in there. Skylar Alston, a linebacker from North Carolina, is going to end up being probably one of the better linebackers in that 28 class. He was in one offer, in-state offer, did go out this weekend to Ty Johnson, who's an in-state offensive lineman, plays at Lucy Beckham over there in Mount Pleasant. He got an offer from South Carolina and really kind of seen his recruitment blow up a little bit with Georgia, getting a Georgia offer, North Carolina, Virginia Tech, Stanford. So they, you know, ended up, you know, all in all, even with the weather, they were able to get some of their guys in and get them around the coach staff and things like that.
Yeah, and I know that a lot of people wanted Trey Segura to get in there this weekend, but the coaches were just with him on a school visit the day before. Yeah. I do think the Gamecocks still are doing well there. Moving over to hoops, the ladies beat Auburn on the road 81-51. They'll play Texas A&M tomorrow night. So they are rolling again after that kind of bloop in the radar loss to Oklahoma. Men's basketball dropped two games this week. Alex and I already talked about the Florida game with Phil and JC on Friday. That was just, you never want to see a 40, almost 50 burger get hung in your face. And then yesterday, Alex, it was a heartbreaker. I know you were covering the game. The Gamecocks lost in overtime to LSU. So that's the recap of what happened. Softball starting up, I believe, this week. Baseball next week. And then tonight we do have a special guest on the show. Again, Trey Kelly, former Gamecock star point guard. Trey and a couple of other of his teammates from the back-to-back NIT championships 20 years ago were in Colonial Life Arena. Kind of stunk with the weather and the turnout and all that, but it was great to honor them, and I'm excited to have Trey on the show. So, Alex, let's get on to the Late Night Gamecock Show.
Gonna turn on the late night show. Hear what's going down in Cooktown.
Well, welcome back into the show. Again, I'm Matt Anderson, the Late Night Gamecock, joined by Alex Jones and also Trey Kelly. Trey Kelly, Gamecock legend. We appreciate Trey being on the show with us today. Trey is currently headed back to D.C. from Columbia. So he's doing this from the car, and we can't thank him enough for that. But a quick recap on Trey Kelly. Look, you can't go into the Gamecock record books without seeing Trey's name a dozen times. Trey Kelly wore the garnet and black for four seasons. Over his career, Trey was a part of one NCAA tournament team, back-to-back NIT championship teams. Trey came to South Carolina after a prep career in Washington, D.C., chose the Gamecocks over UConn, Miami, Georgia Tech, and West Virginia. Immediately made his way into the rotation as a backup point guard his freshman year. In school history, he ranks 12th all-time with 1,488 career points, tied for third in games played with 134 games, fifth in minutes played with 3,956, seventh in three-pointers made at 167, third in assists, 510, an assist. That's what the Gamecock fans would like to see on the court right now. Trey's senior year, he averaged 18.9 points per game and 5.1 assists. A first-team All-SEC member in 2006-2007 was the 2006-2007 Francis Pomeroy Naismith Award winner for the best player in the country, 6 foot or shorter, and was the first-team All-SEC tournament player in 2006. In 4 years as a Gamecock, his teams won an average of 20 games per year. Trey, I think that you might be the only Gamecock point guard all time that can say that. Averaging 20 plus wins over your career for the Gamecocks. After that, Trey, you went overseas. You played professionally for 13 years. So my first question to you, buddy, is how are you keeping yourself busy now?
Man, I'm doing so much. I got my son with me here. He was on the court with me yesterday at Colonial Life. So that's my main job every single day. Run around and take care of him. He's taking care of me as well. I do a lot of things back in Washington, D.C. With youth basketball, prep basketball, even some of the college and pro guys I work with back in D.C. I'm opening up a recovery wellness center in Washington, D.C. down in Georgetown coming in May. So that's my big project that I'm working on right now.
Man, you're crazy busy, and I know you recently came back and got your degree from South Carolina as well. Can you talk about that?
Man, that was amazing. My senior year, I played with a torn meniscus the entire SEC season. So that averaged, 18 points, 5 assists, basically on one leg. If you look at those pictures back then, I'm wearing a brace on my knee the entire SEC run. And I got surgery at the end, and I chose an agent. So I left school. I just left my classes on the table. And I finally, was able to come back. Charles Waddell, who was the former associate athletic director, was huge in, kind of getting me back together there academically. Also, Maria Hickman, she played a big part in that as well. Kerry Rich also played a big part in that as well. So I was happy to come back and finish up my classes. Hopefully I can walk into the Hall of Fame come October. Since I graduated, I wasn't able to get in because I wasn't a graduate. So that automatically.
That's a heck of a lot of motivation there, Trey.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I want to help the program, man. I want to be a part of the program somehow. It seems like I'm always getting guys to sign it. Grant Polk is one of my guys. Of course, Miles Studi is one of my guys from Washington, D.C. I'd like to get some point guards down there to run the show. I'm sure we're going to talk about that tonight. That was probably my biggest motivator to somehow be a part of the program. I know you got to have your degree in order to be a staff member, and whatever that is, I don't even want to do it at any other school. Like I would only work in college basketball if it's the University of South Carolina.
Well, Trey, I love that. I know you're staying busy, man. 13 years pretty much overseas. I know you did some NBA DL, some G League stuff. What was that experience like going overseas? And I think that sometimes people don't realize the level of competition, and also the quality of life is pretty good in some cases too.
It was amazing, man. I really enjoyed it. When I left Colombia, I went. My first stint was in Zagreb, Croatia. I played with the group Sabona, who was Drazen Petrovic's old team. So we played at his arena. They named the arena after him. He had a big Jordan-like statue out front. So adapting to the cultures over there in Europe. I played in China a few years. I played in South America, played in like 13 different countries, if I'm not mistaken, altogether. For about 5 years, I played all year round. So I was able to Italy, played in Belgium. Puerto Rico, so many different places. And it was just a blast, man, because I was doing what I love. No one who, you know, worked as hard as me. So I was touched that, you know, being a 6 foot guy, being able to play for 13 years says a lot. And I kind of did this with grit, grind, and, you know, making my way every single day. And, you know, I enjoyed that part of it.
I mean, most people don't get to say they got to do what they love for 13 years professionally in any walk of life. So to be able to do that, man, hats off to you. What was it like coming back to Colonial Life Arena this past weekend? Obviously, the weather kind of put a damper on things, but just to see some of those guys, how close are you still with all of them? And just tell us about the weekend.
Listen, it's about eight of us in a Instagram group chat, and we talk every day. we talk every single day. We're joking around, just like our college days. You know, we are the best of friends, man. We had a great, great time together. I only had Carlos Powell for 2 years. I had Rocky Trice for two. Had Terrence Kinsey for three, Balkman for three, my best friend Wallace for four, Bryce Sheldon for two. And I mean, we just had the greatest time, man. We really enjoyed each other. We liked and loved playing with each other. We enjoyed each other's time off the court. It showed on the court. You know, you said that I averaged 20 plus wins in my career. And that was because I played with my friends. You know, I played with guys that I wanted to see succeed. We had about seven pros, if I'm not mistaken. At least seven, eight of us, you know, played professionally at some point. And
yeah, I was looking over it. I mean, Carlos is from my neck of the woods, by the way. Carlos went to Wilson. Yes. I went to South Florence. He's got me by a couple of years, but still try to talk to Carlos when I can. He's a busy, busy guy. And then Brandon Wallace, man, I was there when Brandon Wallace won the state championship at Silver Bluff.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And Brandon was on the show last year, I believe, and we love talking to Brandon, man. He's the best.
Man, he's amazing.
And what he's doing athletically, coaching, is fantastic. I love it. I mean, I keep up with him on Facebook. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Trey, I want to kind of talk about this year's team a little bit. For those of you who don't know, Trey – isn't just still a Gamecock basketball guy. He bleeds garnet and black. He's out there tweeting football, women's basketball. I know I didn't see any Gamecock baseball stuff, but I saw the Dodgers game.
I got to get with the baseball. I need to come to a game. See, I always come to all the other guys. I've been to football games. I've been, of course, men's basketball and women's basketball. I need to get to a baseball game, you know, to get a bit connected with those guys. When I was there, you know, Ray Tanner was taking those guys to World Series. So I need to get connected with baseball so I can get some tweets in.
Well, Trey, we got you covered there. Let me know when you want tickets to a game. We got you.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
So, man, let's talk about this basketball team. This is a different era than when you played. I mean, Trey, I'm 37, so I'm not too far behind you. You know, played high school, never played college. But – man, looking at this now, Trey, it's so much European and NBA is coming to the college game, and just the way that, you know, the amount of 3-point shots that are going up now, the way that the big guys are built. I mean, you don't see very many Tony Kitchens walking through the door anymore.
Oh, no.
So, you know, what part of the game right now in college do you think is lacking from just a fundamental standpoint? And if you can talk about the Gamecocks too, that'd be awesome.
I think you know, the issue in college basketball as a whole is more so the Gamecocks issue. I'm not here to knock anybody. I think, you know, some people weren't too happy about my tweet about, you know, certain things. That wasn't intended for any one person or any coach or anything. That's what we need. We need a point guard. And we're missing that. I think I put up a stat on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, where, you know, we have 3-4-plus assist guys in the last 20 years. That's incredible to me. That is a program epidemic, if you ask me. Like, there's no way that's possible. And the point guards those 3 point guards that average 4-plus assists are, you know, you're talking about myself, Devin Downey, and Talon Cooper, who took those guys to the NCAAs. You know, all 3 had great, great seasons in the years that they did that, and they ran the team. I think, you know, Devin was a little bit more of a scorer intentionally than the other two, but are 3 of the best point guards in history of the school. Why wouldn't we go and try to find guys who can emulate that in some way? Because I think if that can happen, we can find some success, you know, with our program as a whole. And I come to games all the time. Like, I've been more involved the last 5 or 6 years, and I'm just not seeing that. And that has to be an issue, you know, and it's been an issue for our program for a long time now.
You know, Trey, I kind of go back, and my first real memories of Gamecock basketball was probably like 95, 96. Yeah. So, you know, I go back to, I'll just go through the timeline with you. You have really Melvin Watson's the first one I remember. And then he handed the keys over to Aaron Lucas. Aaron handed them over to Mike. Mike handed them kind of over to you, but you and Mike kind of both did that. Then you had Devin. And then after that, man, I mean, I guess PJ Dozier and Jalen. And I don't, am I missing anybody there, Trey?
No.
But, I mean, but that's where I'm going with that, Trey, is like every year the Gamecocks have had significant success, it's because of a point guard, right?
For sure.
I mean, you can ask Brandon. I'll ask Brandon right now. How many times did you make his life easier because of a post pass or an alley-oop or taking the defense away from that side of the court? And all of those things matter.
Man, I think – listen, he wasn't there this weekend. But I was a huge part in Balkman getting drafted. You know, him running the floor, being open, like me getting the big man off his feet. Balkman was a great finisher, quick finisher, athletic finisher. You know, Wallace the same. Torrance Kinsey even, you know, running the floor. Like, you got to have somebody to get these guys the ball. And not just, you know, from an X and O standpoint, but from a leadership standpoint, I think. That's you know, leaders are, get everybody involved. Leaders are facilitators, if you ask me. I don't think I've ever seen great leaders be just scoring point guards. So we have to find that guy somewhere. You know, I hear the budget of the NIL and everything being thrown around, and that it's a problem. You know, it's definitely a problem. I know we're last or next to last or something like that, and I get it. You know, but we gotta find a hidden gem somewhere to come and run this program.
I mean, but, you look at, go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, I was going to say, Trey, you got a, you know, up close and in person look at the team yesterday. Just what are your thoughts on the team this year with everything you've seen, be it in yesterday's game and throughout this season?
We have a lot of slow starts. I think because we don't have a traditional point guard, the floor lacks spacing. Normally when you have a guy who can really get in the lane, get downhill, get guys involved, the floor just automatically spaces itself, you know, with pick and rolls and stuff like that. I think we run more sets because we don't have that traditional point guard where we can, you know, Coach Odom, we were laughing and joking about it yesterday in the suite. My senior year, Coach Odom stuck me and Brandon Wallace at the jump circle and played top pick and roll the whole year. I mean, that's just all we did. And, you know, I got in the lane and, you know, created for other guys, created for myself. And, you know, we need something like that. And I feel like that's what we lack right now. You know, Michi's a great player, but I think he benefited more when Talon was here and a guy who can control the game down the stretch. And he can just kind of, you know, do his part where he's, you know, getting downhill off the wings and in transition with his, you know, strong body and making open shots sometimes. You know, but he's not that traditional point guard. That's no knock on him, but he's not a traditional point guard. Yeah. He's a great player, but that's just not what he, you know, came here to do. And I think, you know, when you don't have that, it trickles down to the rest of the guys, because I mean, you just look at all the great point guards in history of basketball. Everybody got involved, and you know, the offense flowed well. We talk about Magic Johnson, Steve Nash, Jason Kidd. You know, you look at the, you know, top college point guards over the years, and that's just what happens, man. If you got a great point guard, the game comes easier for the entire team.
Yeah, Trey, I got a follow-up point there, but I don't know if you can see the chat box, but JDiz3085 says, watch almost every home game Trey played in. Trey played hard every game. Thanks for giving your thoughts on the program. So you got a fan out there, Trey.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And that's pretty true, man. I mean, you know, the motive and everything was different for us back then. We played hard every practice. Like, we just came, you know, we were – ignited group individually and as a team, just every time we laced them up, there was no off times where we just were in the gym doing nothing and we didn't want to get it done. So, you know, we, you know, for myself, I, you know, that compliment for myself, you know, I came from a tough background in Washington, D.C. So that grit and that grind and that hard nose and tough basketball play, was just natural for me, and that's why I was able to play so long as a pro.
Trey, with that in mind, you know, that's one of the questions that I have now, just the hunger that players have, because when you start getting paid at a very young age, right, you know, I mean, I don't know what the rules are in D.C., but in different states around the country, you can get NIL as a high school kid, which I got no problem with NIL. I think everybody should get paid for their name, image, and likeness. They should. I wish y'all had the opportunity as well. But the issue that I see with it is I don't think that until you're really a professional, and what I mean by that is professional, like playing professional basketball, not in college, you actually can be an adult and understand what that means. And I wonder, like, the motivation that you had to go play professionally was a strength of yours, and now we're seeing that lacking around the country.
Absolutely. It has to be some sense of entitlement when a kid is getting paid, you know, a big time amount of money, six figures. You know, some of these guys are getting seven figures to play college basketball. They don't have any motives past college basketball, most of them. You know, you got the NBA guys who are going to come in one or two and they're done. But you're getting guys trying to fight for a sixth and seventh year, taking NCAA to court for eighth year or whatever, like, just to go and get paid. Like, we had motives, and, you know, we wanted to play professionally. We wanted to play in the NBA. We wanted to play overseas. We wanted to, you know, have long careers. And I think these guys, because it's being given so easily at the age of 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, that's more of the motivation now than to further your career after you leave college. I think Calipari was on record the other day speaking about, you know, just the mindset of getting paid, that's over with. And, you know, they have to, you know, work a 9-to-5 if they don't play overseas, or just, you know, try to go into the work field in any way. And, you know, that has to be a rude awakening when, you know, you've been getting $100,000, $800,000, $1.2 million, whatever you've been getting. Because more so than not, the kids who are getting, you know, that mid-level to high-level NIL money for 4+ years aren't the guys who are going to be in the NBA. That's just, you know, the guys that are going to be in the NBA are going to be there 1 or 2 years. But those 4, 5, 6-year guys that are fighting to stay in college, you know, their chances are pretty slim to none on making it to the NBA. And I don't even think they have intentions or, you know, desires to play overseas anymore. That's just because you're getting overseas money or more now in college. And it's just, you know, it's saturating the game and saturating the quality of it. Guys are not really playing hard anymore. You know, there's no fight down the stretch of the game, 2 or 3 minutes left. And it's tough to watch.
Trey, it can be, because, I mean, I grew up in an era when, you know, you played AAU, you played high school. Like, we weren't taking, like, photo ops after the game. You know what I mean? Like, if we lost, like, we were mad.
Yeah, so, and that's one of my things as well. Like, not even just the photo ops, but, you know, social media, you know, really started to crank itself up around my 5th year as a pro. And I couldn't post my highlights after a loss. You know, we lost. You know, I had 30 or 29 and 25 in losses before. And I couldn't post the highlights. I could not. I mean, there's no that was a thing for me. Highlights after the loss.
Well, Trey, the Gamecocks right now, and look, I think I don't want to blame coaching staff because I really do think it's a product of the era. But Gamecock players right now are down 27, hitting a three and shooting off the arrow down court. Get back on D.
That's amazing to me. Yeah, it's just, you know, the kids are different, man. That's just what it is. It's just different growing up in situations where, you know, they probably didn't have much adversity to begin with, you know, in life. And I feel like we had more of that back then, just guys who just came out and entered college with like a hard-nosed mentality. And that's just long gone, it seems. I mean, you got some guys that, you know, that play hard, that have the talent. But from overall spectrum, it's really hard to watch. I'm sure it's hard to deal with it as coaches who played in eras back then.
It has to be. I mean, you see times when Lamont Parrish is clearly saying, like, who told you to do that? No one said to do this or do that. And I mean, Trey, one of the things that's bothering Gamecock fans is the amount of pump fakes the Gamecocks are taking right now. You know, Trey, like when I was, okay, listen, when I was taught basketball back in the early 2000s, that, you know, when my first time really playing, it was, we wanted a paint touch on every possession. We wanted to obviously try and score. And if we couldn't get, you know, a paint touch that leads to a post basket, I mean, we just ran the classic Carolina fast break, right? That's what we ran nonstop. We got in that set and it was just, you know, motion, motion, motion. But, right, you know, it seems like we don't see that many set plays anymore. We see a lot of plays that are kind of off of, you know, these two things happen, then you flare out, but it's not like running a set play. And sometimes I think with the maturity of some of these players now and just, you know, how they've played the game growing up on grassroots, I think it's hard to, especially in this NIL era, you might have a guy for 1 year and he's gone, or you might have 9 new guys on a team. Like, how can you fix that and say we're going to be a cohesive unit bringing 9 new guys on the court?
Yeah, that's tough. And they're putting programs like South Carolina behind the 8-ball when they do stuff like that. Because if we don't have, you know, the financial resources to put into our basketball program, and then you just, you know, you're basically getting a bunch of guys off the street in a sense. Yeah, you get a chance to work with them over months, but that first month is like, you know, you're getting to know new people. They have to learn your system. You have to learn who they are. You have to know what they can do, what they can't do. And it,
it hurts. They're going to have to put something, you know, in writing, some type of stipulation around some of this stuff, to strengthen these programs, to strengthen college basketball, because, you know, if you're not getting guys who are committed to, you know, 2, 3, 4 years at your program, it's going to continue to look like this. I'm not even a fan of what the kid Johnson did, you know, going back and forth to Ohio State. You know, I get that's the name of the game, and there's no problem. You know, that you can't blame the kid for that. You really can't, because they're allowing this stuff. You know, we wouldn't even think that's possible in our day. But that's what they're doing now, because if they're going to pay you, why not go? Why not go?
Yeah, you know, Trey, I'm right there with you, because I think about a couple of things there. Like, it's the rules now, right? And if they're going to pay you more money and you're allowed to get paid, I mean, you try and find the best situation for yourself, but at the end of the day, dollar signs matter. But when I think about, like, this never-ending transfer, I mean, there's kids that are on their fifth school in 5 years. I mean, by year two, year three, like, you knew where Brandon was with your eyes closed on the court. Like, you can't recreate that.
For sure. For sure. For sure. And it's so, I don't know how they fix that. I mean, like I said, you gotta you know, put some type of stipulations into this stuff. You know, you're getting all that money. I mean, you got to follow some type of rules. This can't just be no hose bar. You got to be able to be here 2 years. You got to be able to, I mean, even, you know, if you're some type of score, if you just, you got a certain points, you get a certain amount of wins to get and check in South Carolina, schools who normally win conference tournament, the school getting $2 million a year, and I don't think they went past the second round of NCAA. This is a, you know, one of the big time.
Then we might have lost Trey there. We'll try and get him back in. But Alex, you know, with Trey, I do think what he's talking about is some really good points. And it's things that, you know, we haven't had that overarching conversation outside of, you know, Coach Parrish has 9 new guys on the court right now. Or on the team, and maybe more. And I think it's an epidemic in college basketball. Go ahead.
Well, now this isn't a South Carolina thing, but, you know, now you got these guys who have played in G League games or NBA games who are coming back into college. Mm-hmm. And that seems like that flood door is opening. It's just, you know, we can have a whole episode about, you know, some of the things that the NCAA, whoever needs to do, but it's just getting kind of out of hand with the transfer portal. And, you know, now you got these NBA guys even coming back into college.
Yeah, I just reached out to Trey and let him know we lost him. Really appreciate Trey. There he is.
I'm back in, yes. I don't know what happened.
Nah, so Trey, where I was actually going to go with next is just, you know, it's impossible when you have guys that like Charles Bediaka who have gone, entered the draft, find an agent, played in the G League, what was it, January 17th, and now he's playing a college basketball game. I mean, there's just no rules.
Yeah, that's insane to say the least. And my thing is, like some of the big time coaches have said, I've heard Calipari speaking about this stuff a lot. And you know, what are you teaching the young men? You know, with this kind of thing that you're allowing a kid to go pro, that has made money as a pro, and then go back to college like that. I mean. I don't even know how you would feel. I wouldn't feel comfortable with that.
The transfer portal is already hurting high school recruiting, but that's going to hurt these high school kids even more these days if you have this stuff happening, because then you just continue to lose roster spots for those guys.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, it's almost extinct in a sense. Like they are not looking at these guys, and they're saying it. Rick Pitino said it blatantly. Yeah. you know, we're not even looking at high school kids. And that hurts, you know, for a high school kid who's working his butt off, you know, trying to get an opportunity. And to hear that, you know, one of the biggest college coaches in the history of the game is saying they're not even looking at us, that hurts.
Well, Trey, I had a half-cocked idea the other day, and I'm mainly saying this jokingly, but I will not be surprised, and you're the perfect person to ask this to, by the way. I will not be surprised when one college team just says, you know what, screw it. If there's no rules, go hire, you know, a team from Spain, all professionals that are 25, 26 years old, never played right. in college. Take right. the whole team, pay them all $1 million plus a year, pay the coach $5 million. I mean, Trey, if that happened, how much would they wreck college basketball? You took a professional team.
Yeah, they would do a lot because they, you know, they play the game greatly over there, so they would have a chance at the title, to say the least. And
the thing I laughed about is like, you know, when they're calling out their sets, you're not even going to understand the language.
Right, you're not going to understand anything. You know, so yeah, I mean, I don't even know what the purpose is of it. Of the, you know, all of this stuff that's going on. I'm not really sure. You know, I thought it was to, you know, compensate what some of the kids are bringing in, but it's not that anymore. It's something else that we know nothing about.
I mean, I hear you there. I agree. Trey, I got some quick hitters for you if you got some more time. You got a couple minutes?
Yes, sir.
All right. So Trey, going back to when you picked the Gamecocks, what made you pick South Carolina?
So I had some recruiting issues started up by my AAU coach. And I won't kind of go into that, but there were some things that were done to kind of sabotage my recruiting. And I kind of, you know, in a sense, had to land on South Carolina.
Where would you have gone if none of that stuff happened then, Trey?
So I verbally committed to Syracuse as a 10th grader. So it would have been Syracuse, but at some point Syracuse kind of backed off because of some of the things that were going on with my AAU program. And then Miami with Perry Clark would have mm-hmm. been my next choice.
All right, looking back on your career, what are some of your couple of your favorite memories wearing the Garnet and Black?
It's got to be the NIT championships. Both of those runs, I had about 150 people come from Washington, D.C. to see me play.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, that was amazing. My grandmother, my aunts, my uncles, friends from my neighborhood, guys who I played high school with, lifetime buddies. Like it was a great atmosphere, you know, for everyone from my city that, you know, to come up and see me play at Madison Square Garden. And then that second NIT championship, I brought my grandmother on the floor to take, you know, pictures with me and the trophy. And that's floating around somewhere. That should be, like, you know, I'm pretty sure the school, I have the pictures, but I'm sure the school have those pictures somewhere. So that was
awesome. We'll see. We'll try and get Alex in touch with the SID and see if we can figure something out and get those to you. I know you got them, but then those need to be on your Insta, man.
For sure. For sure. For sure.
All right. So I got this one might be tough based on, you know, what your thoughts are on the team this year. But if I could bring back prime Trey Kelly and two players that you played with in college, who are you adding to this year's Gamecock team and you feel like y'all could do some damage in the NCAA tournament?
I am going Carlos Powell, Brandon Wallace. I need that question. I need to answer that question like twice. Cause I'll go Balkman and Kinsey. I'll go twice and Kinsey. I can take two guys with me in different ways from that team.
And then I basically asked that question because, like, what was Carlos? Carlos was kind of, he wasn't really a super slasher, but man, he just, he wore 15 and feet in. He just wore it out, man. 15 yeah, feet.
He was perfect. Played like the 3-4. So he was a matchup problem for everybody that we played against. Because those, like, if it was like a game where he was like playing primarily four, you know, he was taking those guys outside of three, or he was getting it at the elbow, that short post, facing up, yeah, getting by those guys. He had a great jump hook off the glass. I mean, he was something else. But he played hard.
And then with Brandon, man, I mean, they need a rim protector, and they need that guy that can go up and jump to the top of the backboard and get it. Man, that would be fun to watch.
Yes, sir.
And then obviously, you know, we already said your accolades, so we know why you're there. Yeah. All right, Trey, we're going to get one more and then we'll let you run. We appreciate you so much for being on here, but I saw your Gamecock Athletics Mount Rushmore, and you had George Rogers, Asia, you had Jadeveon, and Alex English. I mean, the GOAT in my book. Who would be your Gamecock basketball Mount Rushmore?
Just men's?
Wherever you want to go. Yeah, do men's if you want to.
Okay, so my personal favorite, I think Hans Kinsey was the best player I ever played with, skill-wise. I mean, he was unbelievable mid-range and defensively. I've seen him lock up guys. That jab crossover that all these guys are doing in the NBA now, and over the past probably 7-8 years, he invented that, I'm sure. Trust me, he invented that. So I'm going to go English, Kinsey. I'll take Devin Downey. And then Asia Wilson.
Yeah. Now, I'm not going to tell BJ you left him off, because you know BJ's competitive. He'll get mad. I'm not going to tell BJ.
So there's a shoe-in with Alex. There's a shoe-in with Asia. Torrance Kinsey was my personal favorite. And I've loved Devin Downey. So I'm going to say this. The crazy thing is I've never seen BJ play.
Okay. Yeah, you can't pick somebody you haven't seen play.
Yeah, I've seen more highlights of Alex than anybody, you know.
Yeah.
Just in the NBA, you know, with South Carolina. I can't – like, I know BJ can shoot, but I can't tell you what he really did, to be honest with you.
Well, Trey, I'll get offline. I'll tell you all about BJ. I'll tell you all about him. But, Trey, man, we appreciate having you on, man. Appreciate you. You know, you're driving back to D.C. and you hopped on with us. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem at all. No problem at all. That's my school, man.
And Trey, man, anytime you want to come back on, just holler. I got you, okay?
Absolutely. I appreciate it.
All right, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, you guys have a good one.
You too.
All right, see you, Trey. Thanks for coming on again. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to do Rambling and Gambling. We have Justin Lau of Sports Cap Value talk Super Bowl.
Morning, Carl. Usual?
Yeah.
Your oldest was in here the other day. Said the two of you took a trip down to my neck of the woods. How'd that go?
You might as well give me one of those Carolina cards while you're at it.
I knew I liked that one.
Yeah.
There you go, my friend.
Thanks.
Hey, Carl. Congratulations.
See you tomorrow, Freddy.
You bet.
J.C. Sherbert here. Had a brilliant idea that some good friends of mine in Florence have told me about. Next time you're having a wedding or an event or anytime you got to feed a bunch of people, talk to my friends over at Flavortown Eats and Events. That's right. It's a food truck / trailer. Prepares the food fresh on site right there for you. No hassle. It's absolutely delicious. They'll come out, turnkey solution to feed the masses at your event. Go to their website right now, FlavortownFlow.com. That's FlavortownFlow.com. They have all the contact information you need, and they are a proud sponsor of the Late Night Gamecock Show and the Chiefs Sports Network.
Welcome to Palm Casual Patio Furniture. because we are the factory. Palm Casual has the ability to offer the highest quality outdoor furniture paired with world-class service. Since 1979, our factory showrooms have done our best to make the buying process as easy as possible for our customers. Our understanding of the many factors that go into your decision has helped us create our 30-day trial period that increases the level of comfort our customers feel during the shopping experience. Visit us in Somerville, Mount Pleasant, Myrtle Beach, and Bluffton and online at palmcasual.com for our products and out-of-state locations. Go Gamecocks!
This is the Late Night Gamecock Show with the pride of Hampton County, Alex Jones. And with the king of late night, Matt Anderson. Go Gamecocks!
Welcome back into the Late Night Gamecock Show. Again, I'm Matt Anderson, and joining me as always is Alex Jones of TheBigSpur.com. Special shout out and thanks to Trey Kelly for hopping on for a good long segment there. But now it's time to bring in Justin Lyles of SportsGotValue.com. Justin, how we doing? Did you get snow?
Oh, yeah. We made it through, and we're ready to get back to our normal lives. How we doing, boys?
I'm good. School's canceled tomorrow. I'm hanging on my thread.
Yeah. Question is, can me and Matt and Trey, we put us on the roster right now. Can we make the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, for sure. We can shoot.
What seed would y'all be?
Hey, I'll take 11 right now.
Hey, let Trey do the heavy lifting, okay? But no, it was good to have Trey on. Hope you got to catch some of that there, Justin.
It was. I enjoyed it.
Well, Justin, man, we got the biggest football game in the world coming up in a week from now. I don't know what Alex and I are going to do about the show next week. I don't know if we'll have it during the Super Bowl. We might move it to Monday. Yeah, we'll talk about that. Probably move it to Monday. So can we get you on Monday night, Justin, to recap it?
I'll commit to Monday. I'll make that trade with you.
Right. Well, so Justin, I haven't looked at any of the props. I don't even know what the line is, to be honest. So talk to me about it. What's going on?
Yeah. So obviously this is the Mecca when it comes to sports betting. So this is big as it gets. This is the most wagered event you're going to see across the year. The line came out right at 4.5. It's kind of teetered around 5. New England obviously getting the points against Seattle. Public money is coming in on Seattle as expected. So I'm kind of liking New England here, getting the points at 4.5. And what I'm looking at is I'm anticipating that Drake May is going to have a better game, what he's had in the last couple in the playoffs. So I'm leaning on that with the Patriots and the points so far. The total is about 45.5. I'm leaning under. These are really two good defenses. And I'm kind of expecting something in the low 20s from each team.
Yeah, I see no way. Like these, with what you said, these two defenses and the way they're playing, like, that Patriots offense, I think they can get going, but they kind of just want to play that hard-nosed football. Like I would definitely think the under is going to be a play here.
Right.
What did you say the over-under was?
I believe it's 45.5 is what it started at, came out at. Yeah, it's 45.5.
Well, so when I used to play DraftKings, right, you were always looking for – and I don't know if you even dip your toes in DraftKings, Justin, but you were always looking for the high over-under games and trying to get pieces, right? And I remember what they considered high was anything over 50. Right. Sometimes you got some 53s, 54s, 56s. But that's where the entire market moved to, you know, those games. Would 45.5 be considered a low over-under total right now?
No, I don't think so. I think if you had got around 40, it would have been. But I think this is right where it should be. I think New England's averaging about 18 points a game in the playoffs. So, and Seattle's obviously had their way with teams. So I think it's set about right. And I just don't see it moving much as well with the line. I think they've got it capped pretty good.
So that's what 24-20 Seahawks is where Vegas is putting that implied game score. Okay. Yeah, thinking about that, I mean, Sam Darnold's been playing kind of out of this world for a while. And, you know, God forbid you're one of those teams that just didn't let him develop, didn't give him the time. I mean, it helps when you have who I think pound for pound is the best wide receiver on the planet in Jaxon Smith-Njigba throwing the ball to. But it's one of those things where, okay, is it going to be Drake May steps up to the moment, right? Like, this is his first time under the lights in probably since a high school state championship or something like that. When you go back to his time at North Carolina, is he ready? Is Vrabel ready as a head coach? Is that Patriots defense going to continue to be lights out? Can they get Sam Darnold seen ghost? Is Sam Darnold going to turn back into a pumpkin? I mean, I think this has all of the what ifs and, you know, the storylines galore for me because, you know, Seattle, I think, probably has a top five defense in the NFL, maybe top two. Right. And then, you know, Patriots aren't far behind them. So it's, in my mind, like, I would lean, and this might be a public thing, I would lean to Drake May because I've seen him put up video game numbers. And if I have to bet on a quarterback, should I be betting on Drake May?
Well, that's the thing. You know, Sam Darnold's been kind of passed around in the league, and then now he's come out. He had a great year with Minnesota, and they're kind of regretting not re-signing him. And look here, you know, he had probably the best game of his career in the NFC Championship game. So, this is a whole different level when you're in the Super Bowl.
Yes. I mean, I think I'm leaning with you. You said Pats plus the 4.5, right?
Yeah, I'm going to take the points. And, again, I'm betting on May's just going to play a little bit better, you know, and not make many mistakes and have a chance at the end of the game.
Is that a line that will move at all, you think, or is it pretty set?
No, I if anything, it may go move to 5, but I don't see it going the other way. I don't see it going to 4. It's either going to stay at 4.5 or to 5 unless some crazy money happens, but I don't see that happening.
Gotcha.
So, obviously, there's the prop angle for the Super Bowl. I mean, you can bet on anything from heads or tails for the coin toss, the over-under on the national anthem, what color is the Gatorade going to be that they pour out. And there's a million different props. I don't know if you want to talk specific player props, if you want to talk your favorite props of the game. I'll let you take the floor.
Sure. Yeah, we're going to kick the night off with the coin toss just because there's no strategy and it's just fun to do. And we like to, you know, huddle around the TV and watch the referee kind of talk about it and flip the coin, you know, and hold our breath for a second. So we're going to go with heads on that one. We have there's nothing behind it. It's just for fun. So put a little half unit on that. And then we're going to kick into the player props. Obviously, I spoke about Drake May. I'm going to take him for an anytime touchdown. I'm assuming that they get around that 1 or 2 yard line and they're just going to sneak it in. So I'm going to bet.
Anytime touchdown means a rushing touchdown with a quarterback, right?
That is correct.
Well, yes. I guess it could be receiving on a trick play, but.
Well, anytime with a receiver, that means them catching the ball. But anytime with a quarterback, they've got to run it in.
Oh, okay.
Yep. So not passing. So I'm betting that Drake May is going to sneak it in on like a short, you know, short and goal type yardage. Also like Bobo, the receiver for Seattle, anytime touchdown, he's at like 10-1. So okay. I'm going on the value here, and this is going to be a not so popular pick. I'm going to go with Kenneth Walker under his rushing yards. Right now it's at like 73.5. And I know a lot of people, the public is going to hammer the over with him. He's looked really good. So I'm going to – and one thing I want to give our listeners and viewers is, you know, it's always people – the public wants to take the overs. That's the thing to do. So if you want to play these unders, maybe wait towards it closer to game time and let that number creep up, give you a little more comfort, you know, a few more yards on the back end and take that under. But I'm going to take Kenneth Walker for under 73.5. We'll see. I'm assuming that's going to move during the week. And then I'm going to take Jay Smith-Njigba at I'm going to take his under 94.5 receiving yards. I think the Pats find a way. They're going to get beat by somebody else if they're going to get beat. So I'm going to take the under there as well. Again, I'm looking for value. I know it's not a popular pick, but I'm going with the under there.
Well, I can tell you in the conference championship game, one of my buddies in my brother's group chat, but he has owned Kenneth Walker in fantasy year after year after year. And he's like, he bet something. Like, I don't know if it was, he had the this person had the Rams plus the points or the money line or something. And he was like, I've never seen Kenneth Walker play this well. So I know that person will be very happy to hear to take the under.
Yeah. And that's the thing, too, is like, look at these prop odds. Like, I mean, you're seeing some of these overs at minus 160, 170. Like, stay away from that. There's no value there. So I'm looking, I'm not going to take anything greater than minus 130, 135 at best. And what I'm seeing now with a lot of these unders, you can get them around minus 110, minus 120. So to me, that's extreme value. And then I'm going to take Smith's catches under 6.5 receptions. Smith Nigma at, and that's at plus money. I mean, he caught a lot in the NFC games. So I'm betting that he's not going to have the game that everybody thinks he's going to have.
See, I love that. I love when you fade. I mean, I think half of successful betting is knowing your numbers and being smart about it, and the other half is fading the public.
Right. And then another one I'm going to take is the kicker for New England, over 1.5 field goals at minus 120. I just think we can figure out a way to get two field goals during this game. I just like that from that position.
Well, even with the implied point score, 24-20, that's two field goals for that Patriots kicker. So that seems like a really good bet.
Right. So I'm looking at that. And then if you want to take some others, I mean, this game obviously will probably more than likely start off really slow. Teams not wanting to make a mistake, go very conservative. So you can bet like the second half, more points to be scored in the second half versus the first. I think that's a pretty good bet. Just watch out for the juice. And then stay away from like, will there be a safety? Will it go into overtime? A lot of the public likes to bet that stuff. Those are sucker bets. Will there be a two-point conversion? Yes, there was some last year, but those are heavy public bets. So for our viewers, I would cautiously stay away from those.
All right. Any other Super Bowl bets you got off the top of your head?
No, that's it so far. I think that's plenty. I would just suggest to our viewers, don't get caught just firing from the hip, because next thing you know, you've got 50 prop bets and then you're kind of pulling your hair out, so to speak.
All right. So if someone wanted to live bet this game, and let's say that, Patriots get up 13-3. Right, 14-3, maybe interception return, kickoff return, something like that. Would you then say I'm riding with my Patriots plus 4.5, or would you be tempted to say, I'm getting a lot of value here on the Seahawks? They'll probably come back.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it depends on what that number is, right? You look at maybe an alternate spread even before the game, before that situation even happens. Like, even if you like the Pats really well, you could take them as a minus number and pay out really significant odds. Or take Seattle, like, at minus – if you like them a lot, take them at minus 10 or something for the game and have crazy odds. So, but if I'm in that situation, maybe you want to hedge a little bit and take Seattle money line where it pays out a significant amount. But in my instance, I'm probably staying away based on the amount of money I've got on the game. So, I'm going to stay away at that point.
Yeah. I was just trying to give someone that maybe was gun-shy going into it and then said, hey, this game is not playing out the way that we thought it would. Which way should we go? Is there any value?
Yeah, that's the best thing. I mean, that's a good question, good point. I think if you're kind of uncertain, kind of pre-kickoff, just wait and see. Maybe you watch the first quarter and then look and go from there.
All right. Well, I got to give Justin more than just the Super Bowl. So I got some SEC basketball games coming up this week. We are going to hit both of the men's games, and I picked some other ones. Justin's got these in advance, so he's had a chance to look at it. What we're going to do going forward, as long as SEC basketball is going on, we're going to continue to give you some games of the week coming up and give Justin's, just initial thoughts on it. So Tuesday night, Gamecocks travel to Austin, Texas. KenPom has this game at 82-71, so Longhorns favored by 11, over-under of 153. Any thoughts on the game, Justin?
Yeah, I like the over here. This is a Pulse game. South Carolina seems to score points but give up a lot. Yep. I'm leaning the over here, and I mean, this is a Pulse game. This is probably a stay away from the line. We got to see what South Carolina's made of. They haven't looked well. They lost another heartbreaker on Saturday to LSU. So I'm looking for the over in that game.
I really agree with you there. That was my initial gut call. Texas fouls a lot, and the Gamecocks are a good free throw shooting team. I also wouldn't be too scared of South Carolina plus 11 if that ends up being the number in this game, because Texas has gone hot and cold numerous times. Right.
I think you'll see in that game very early where this one's going to go, just with what as Texas gets out on a big run early. We've seen how South kind of does with handling those early runs. You're going to know pretty early in that game how that one's going to go, just from an overall end of the game result perspective and then from a betting standpoint as well.
I think so, too. Then Wednesday night, Texas A&M, don't look now, but they're at the top of the SEC, and they are going to be ranked when the polls come out tomorrow. Wednesday, they travel to Alabama. Alabama joined the ranks of SEC teams getting absolutely throttled in the paint by Florida. Gamecock fans, feel your pain there. This one has Alabama 91-84, over-under of 175. This was pre-Florida game, so these numbers might change a little bit. Let's say, you know, Alex, Texas, I don't think it's going to move too much off. I mean, maybe Alabama minus five and a half, six. It's probably going to stay pretty close.
Yeah, it's in Tuscaloosa, right?
Yeah, it's in Tuscaloosa. Alabama 91, A&M 84, over under 175, Justin.
Yeah, I think I'm going to kind of watch this, wait until kind of tip off and see where the numbers lie. I want to lean towards saying A&M, but this is where I think you're going to see the public come in heavy on A&M. And see this thing kind of come down maybe a little bit, and that's where I'm kind of would lean Bama. But I, at this point, you just got to wait and see. I wouldn't touch the total. That's a lot. Now Alabama can score like crazy. They hit some three pointers real quick. They'll blow that 175 out of the water.
Yeah, I mean, my take on it is I would probably take Alabama plus the points no matter what. I think that this Bediakas stuff is really messing with them. And I think that this Florida game with all the coaching back and forth comments pre-game, I think Alabama is going to come out and try and make a statement against an A&M team that might not be quite top of the league good. Then Saturday is a big day, y'all. We'll start again with Alabama and Auburn. This game is at Auburn. Auburn's projected on KenPom to win 88-87, over-under of 175. I would just want to bet this under on principle.
Yeah, Auburn's starting to play pretty well. They're kind of coming to their senses, so to speak. Anytime you see Bama playing, man, they're always around in the high 170s, around 180 on total. So I'm with you on that. I kind of lean Auburn here in this spot. It's a tough place to play. I know it's a rivalry game, but I like Auburn in this spot.
If Alabama drops these two, y'all, this season's going to get pretty ugly because they're going to be at 9 losses. So they got a lot to play for there. One of the games that I want to pay attention to is Florida at Texas A&M. Earlier today, Florida was favored to win 82-78. I would imagine that number is going to be more than four and by the Gators being favored. Over under 160 here. Right now, I'll get your take on this, guys. I'm going to ride Florida like we rode Georgia at the end of the college football season, and I'm not betting against them until they play someone really good.
Yeah, I mean, I can't go against the seven-footers Florida has. Man, they just completely controlled the paint. Even today in that game where, you know, had a little bit more of a challenge in the paint, completely controlled it. Then you got, you know, Boogie Flan, this guard out there who seemed to be playing better. So I'm kind of in that same thing right now. I'm not going against Florida.
Yeah, Florida's hot right now. They're coming to what we know of. So it's, I mean, they beat down South Carolina last week, and we'll see how the home crowd is at A&M, but yeah, it's hard to bet against Florida.
We got Tennessee at Kentucky. Kentucky's projected to win 72-71, over under 143. This is a game personally, I would take the over 143 here.
Yeah, I'd do the same thing. I'd also lean Kentucky a little bit too. Just Tennessee's not quite a typical Rick Barnes Tennessee team this year. And I think defensively they may not be quite as good there too. But yeah, I'd go over here.
I really like Kentucky in this spot. This might be a big play for me. I like them in this situational. This is a situational bet for me. I just think that they're going to come to play, and this might be a 10-point win for Kentucky.
Yeah. Last one, Missouri travels to Colonial Life Arena. Surprise, surprise, but South Carolina is projected to win 74-73, over-under of 147. This is another game I'd probably take the over on.
Yeah, I think so. It's just you don't know with South Carolina. It's kind of a little bit of, you know, they come out and they get early threes going. Maybe they can have that type of game where they, you know, have like an Oklahoma where they get going or an LSU game. But I think I'd lead the same way you are here.
Yeah, I agree. I'm just going to bet the overs for the rest of the year and just play the probability here because I think that's what's going to happen. I can see us going 6-2, how many games we got hitting the overs. I think that's what's going to happen. We like to play. We're better when we play in the 70s. I think Paris is going to push that in the high 70s, 80s. But, yeah, just wonder what South Carolina is going to be come next Saturday. So, yeah, I like the over.
Well, y'all, we had to get Justin's take on some of these SEC basketball games. We'll continue to do this, and March Madness will be here before you know it. Justin, we're probably going to have an episode on Selection Sunday. Won't ask you to, you know, go ahead and give us all the odds and all that, but we might go pick our Final Four, national champion, all that, react to the bracket. And then you're welcome to join us. We're probably going to have another episode Tuesday night where we go through the bracket in its entirety. And then we'll have another guest on there for that. But I think that'd be a lot of fun. It's usually a longer episode, though, so just fair warning.
I like it. I look forward to it. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
All right, guys. Well, we're going to get out of here, make way for these SEC Sunday night guys. They have just started, so make sure you hop over to their channel. Just a reminder, next Sunday, no show. We're going to have it on Monday. We'll recap the Super Bowl, all of that, look at some of Justin's bets, and get right back into this thing, man. Baseball starting soon, and basketball still be in full gear. So for Justin, for Alex, for myself, thank you all for being here tonight. We hope you have a fantastic rest of your evening. Talk to y'all soon. See ya.
See ya.